Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Oh, is it election day yet? Oh, no, wait, that was yesterday. Good to be back.
We got a great program for you here. And on the political left, returning to the program, Councilwoman Shireen Gourbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hey, and hi to our listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
Shireen, you are, the votes aren't all counted yet. There's over 100,000 left in Salt Lake County, but you're an at-large councilwoman and you're sitting there with 52% of the vote. How does it feel? What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's so far so good. There's still a lot of votes to be counted. I'm just incredibly grateful for our voter engagement. We have, at the time of recording, I think about 350,000 ballots and votes have been counted. And my understanding is there are about 200,000 more to go. So we've got incredible turnout in Salt Lake County. So I'm glad that people are taking advantage of, you know, our vote-by-mail system, are really engaged in the process. But we still have a lot of voters in Utah, or a lot of people who could be voters in Utah that still need to get registered to vote.
Yeah. Dan, I am friends with the elections director, Justin Lee. He's basically saying that we've broken a new record for the total number of voters in the state, 2020, more than any other in history. You got to love that.
Yeah, but okay. I love that. It sounds lovely. I'm grateful for the participation. Like, I'm down with all of that. But we're going to break that record every 4 years at the very least, because presidential races are always interesting years and we always have a lot of people interested in those races, and our population continually grows. So I guess I'm not terribly impressed by it being a record. I'm really grateful, though, that like the number of voters as a percentage of our population is increasing, and that we have more people that are just participating in the process, and it does make us a better state. So way to go, Utah.
Yeah. So to both Shireen and Dan, what a night. We have the presidential race commanding all the attention, a complete nail biter. I've learned that what you watch for is you start with the prior presidential election and look at which states flipped. And at the time of our recording, 5 p.m. roughly on Wednesday night, former Vice President Biden has flipped Wisconsin. He's flipped Michigan. He's ahead in Nevada. He's ahead in Arizona. We have Trump, it looks like, carrying Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, the big winner there. But Dan, this looks like it's trending Biden's direction.
Yeah, it really does. And like, if I, you know, take off my fanboy for just a minute and, you know, how much I love the Hail Mary pass at the end of a football game, like, it's my favorite thing. But it really, of the uncalled, you know, election states that are still left out there, the state that hasn't been called that is troublesome for the Trump campaign is Nevada. And so, it, you know, he did not win it in 2016. And yeah, it's really close right now. I take nothing away from that. But he needs to win the remaining four. And that doesn't look likely with Nevada being in that mix. If it was something like, you know, I don't know, Michigan or Pennsylvania was the one, like, I'd feel a lot better. But, you know, that's just not the case. One thing that's very clear from this election is that polling sucks in America. And I don't use that lightly. It's that no one knows what they're talking about. There is one group, the Trafalgar Group, which is the only group that called the 2016 election and is now in 2020 the only group that was close. You know what I mean? They still thought that Trump stood a much better chance, but polling is broken. And for those of you out there who like to talk to pollsters and like lie to them about like how you plan to vote, man, you have messed up an entire industry that is probably going to take at least a generation to fix.
Yeah. Shireen, what are you seeing from your vantage point? I mean, you had to feel the sort of disheartening news last night when you saw Florida go Trump and when you could see that states weren't shifting. Give us your view here.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I think is that's been sort of interesting to watch as a Democrat is to look at these places where I think we could have had some bigger gains or maybe even some. I don't know that we could have. So Mitch McConnell, everybody's always after Mitch McConnell, right? We ended up with Amy McGrath there. That was not a close race at all. Millions of dollars went into it. the word, you know, she was sort of handpicked by Chuck Schumer to be the candidate. I thought Charles Booker was the much more compelling candidate in that case. And I feel like there's something kind of also broken about kind of the larger system of how we are maybe going after these Senate candidates. And it means so much to what can happen. Kentucky has a Democrat for a governor. So it's possible for a Democrat to win in that state. But Amy McGrath was not the candidate. And when we're thinking about the kind of just inability to get things done because of Mitch McConnell's role in the Senate, it's just stunning to me that we're not, as Democrats, doing a better job laying the groundwork to take those seats when we really need them.
Yeah. I mentioned to both of you off the air that I got kind of tired of all the news, and it just, my head was spinning. I just wanted to go do something else last night. But I went to bed thinking that Trump was had this momentum, and then, of course, woke up, and the first thing I noticed was that he had tweeted some, you know, claiming victory, and he gave his speech and spoke and, you know, said, this is a major fraud on our nation. This is a very sad moment. And that's when I knew that he was in trouble. And Shireen, he's not presidential.
That's right.
And
Wait,
it's kind of, wait, what? It's unnerving what's to happen next, because instead of being patient and, you know, speaking up that every vote counts and let's wait this out, he starts throwing lawsuits, and it's like a hissy fit.
Yeah, I mean, it's very on brand for this president. And I think the thing that makes me nervous about it, I will say I was glad to see that we didn't see, there were many cities preparing for violence. We didn't see that. And I think the kind of protracted nature of the count diffuses a lot of that. But his rhetoric does not create confidence that he's going to say the right thing if we do start to see that behavior, or that he's going to do anything to curtail it. And in fact, I think he's laying the groundwork to incite it in some ways. And that's deeply problematic.
Dan, predict the next week for us. You know, I mean, in other words, just follow the logic that it looks like Biden's going to get this. He may not. But what can our listeners watch for in the next 3 to 4 days?
Well, I think you're going to see there are going to be legal challenges. I mean, you know, there was, I think one of the Trump complaints is there were, you know, the Michigan drop, you know, sometime around, I guess about around midnight or something like that, Utah time, the Michigan drop had like 130,000 new votes for Biden that put him over the top, and zero new votes for Trump. And so that was, you know, statistically, that's impossible, one. Mm-hmm. But it looked odd. And for that reason, I think, you know, the Trump campaign is concerned about something like that happening. But, you know, I'm sure there's technological reasons. I doubt there's anybody trying to, you know, at least my gut feeling is I don't feel like anybody's trying to steal an election or stuff ballots or any of that kind of thing. What I will tell you is I don't see the president positioning people for violence. At least I know that there are those who want to see that. What I will tell you is I think you have a president who is not a politician, who is used to and feels like this is a very competitive thing for him. And honestly, in some ways, personally, and I put this a little bit on Twitter last night, unless you've been on a ballot, it's impossible for you to know how personal an election feels. And I will argue that no election is more personal as far as the country is concerned than the election of our president. And if he loses, President Trump will view this as a moratorium on him, right? And so that he uses legal challenges over the next few days and questions results and those kinds of things, I think if he is not the winner, to Shireen's point earlier, it's important to get the votes right. If and when all, everything's all said and done, I am confident President Trump will turn over the reins in a peaceful manner. He will still have Twitter. He will still be, you know, he will still have an agitator's voice in some ways. But I'm convinced it will be peaceful. Put away, you know, everybody bury your desires for violence, I guess, and let's move on.
Yeah. You know, Dan, just from the political middle, I wish I shared your optimism, because I've just seen nothing from this man that would tell me that he would use restraint. Now, Shireen, we only have another minute left in this segment. We got to talk about the Senate and everything, but react to what Dan said, because from the left, you've got to be concerned like I am from the middle. I don't know. Are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. But I guess I think what's more troubling is the entire system that brought us somebody like Donald Trump creates, I think, this underlying tension in this country. The fact that we didn't see a bigger referendum on Trump suggests to me that as Americans, we like it. We like the fighting. We like the divisiveness. And I think that's the bigger problem.
Well, the Jerry Springer Show was very popular throughout the 80s and 90s. And that show was a complete fight all the time. And I think you've hit a very important chord, Shereen.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about it some more in the second segment. I'm Natalie Gochner with Dan McCain, Shereen Gourbani. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We ended the last segment by just talking about this division in our country, the concerns that we have. And I just want to ask Dan and Shereen, what is it that made this so close? I mean, we're in a pandemic. We're in a recession. The rules of thumb would say that, you know, an incumbent's in trouble in an environment like this. And Donald Trump has performed amazingly well from my vantage point. And Dan, I'll go to you first, but what I think I learn in it is that the heartland of America, so I'm saying not the coast, in the middle there, is not ready for bigger government. And so as much as they find Donald Trump, unsavory, as much as they find him maybe despicable, maybe they find his handling of the coronavirus, you know, corrupt, awful, they're not willing to make bigger government in our lives.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's very interesting. I actually saw an article on this this morning that the lack of a blue wave is really the problem the Democrats need to kind of figure out. The idea that Joe Biden wins, and really there's four states remaining, he just needs to win Nevada, and I think that's the one that will do in, you know, the Trump campaign. But the fact that it came down to this tight of a race, it should tell you, the other things I think I learned is that no one is blaming the president for the coronavirus. Literally, I say this, especially in the Midwest, but there are very few red states that are blaming the president for any of the conditions that we have here as a country today. The pandemic, the recession, all of those things. I think most people, at least on the red side of things, say if it hadn't been for a pandemic, there wouldn't have been a recession. And if there hadn't been a recession and all those other things, well, then we'd go on. And I do think that somehow the Democrats and the blue wave, or the lack of a blue wave, or maybe the blue ripple, I think a lot of people are going to have to stop and ask themselves questions about their agenda. And the promises they're making to America are not promises that America is ready to receive. Yeah. And so how do you govern in that situation?
Yeah, Shereen, so I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, react to that.
So I look at Montana, Arizona, New Jersey voting to legalize marijuana, Oregon decriminalizing hard drugs. I'm looking at, I think South Dakota was on that list too. When I'm looking at the states that voted to expand Medicaid, when I look at Missouri doing overturning a right to work at a ballot initiative, I think we've also seen minimum wage pass. So when voters are actually asked about issues, they consistently come and vote with issues that Democrats are championing and working on. For me, as a person who grew up in North Dakota, who lived in Nebraska and now lives here, I do think there's a question about the role of government and how government should operate in people's lives. But that one is also real tenuous when we start to talk about things like a woman's right to choose or other ways that people have control over a bodily autonomy and what the government's role should be. But when, for me, there's a really different current here around where people get their information and how they get their information. Because there is a large group of people in this country that have a very small sliver of media that they consume that tells a particular story. But again, over and over, when we ask people about issues like should they have access to healthcare they can afford, they're with me. If they're asking, you know, should we have environmental protections that prioritize, you know, people's access to live in a healthy place, a healthy environment, or should we let polluters pollute without having to pay penalties? They're with me. So it's there's something else going on here. But I think people are kind of moving beyond partisanship. I don't think people are banging down the door to become Republicans either. I think people are just kind of more interested in issues that impact their lives. And I don't know that either party has a strong narrative on those right now.
I did talk to several people that said they had the most bipartisan vote they've ever cast. So that's kind of to your point. Hey, we've got so much more to talk about. Before we jump to local races, I just want to hear, Shireen, what's your reaction to the Democrats actually losing a few seats in the House, it looks like, but still keeping a big majority. But the Senate looks like it'll stay Republican. Again, there's still some races out there we don't know, but it looks like we're going to have mixed government.
And I think if we had a functional federal government, that would be the way to do it. It would be nice to have some checks and balances to be able to, the idea would be to bring together the best ideas and get good policy, but I'm not sure that's what we get.
Yeah, so functional would be if the D's took the Senate, the House, and the White House. And Dan, I'm probably like you. I actually like the mixed government because I don't want them to be able to do too much.
Honestly, and that is from a little L libertarian leaning guy like me, I love mixed government. It's like a dream come true, right? I a little bit worry about all one party controlling the whole thing because we have seen in the beginning of presidential terms when they control the whole thing, it gets messy. So hopefully they'll have to work together. But I agree with Shireen. Nothing's going to get done. It's going to be a great 2 years.
Okay, so local races. Let's start with a big one. Mayor Wilson, it looks like she's going to cruise to reelection. Congratulations to Jenny Wilson. Shireen?
Yeah, I think Mayor Staggs just had a really hard time breaking through. I didn't meet people that seemed to have any sense of what the message of that campaign was. And I think largely people in Salt Lake County are proud of what Mayor Wilson has done to try to respond to the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah. In the congressional districts, we get, you know, a lot of things happening there. We need to talk about CD4. Dan, before we do that, Blake Moore, new to the party. This is congressional district number one. We've got someone who's little known, but who has experience in the Foreign Service. I've just heard him do some interviews. I'm impressed. Sharp guy.
Yeah, Blake Moore is a sharp guy, and he was a completely underappreciated candidate and kind of came out of nowhere in the primary and won. And that was, you know, fun to see. And, you know, I think he's going to do a good job in Congress. He's really young and has a bright future and is a leader in Utah.
So we'll keep Chris Stewart, John Curtis. We'll add Blake Moore. What, Shireen, is the word that's going to happen in the Burgess Owens, Ben McAdams race? I believe it's like 48-47 as we record this. There's like a 2,600 vote spread with Congressman McAdams in the lead. What do you expect, Shireen?
Well, so I think the outstanding votes in Salt Lake County will be in his favor. And, you know, honestly, this is always going to be a tight race. But I do think Utahns like having a more independent voice. And Ben McAdams brings that to the table.
Yeah.
And I would disagree. I will say that the Salt Lake County votes last time at the very end trended very Republican. And so you had areas like Harriman and areas like Draper and Riverton that were not counted originally kind of in the first batch in 2018. And those races took McAdams. And if I remember right, in those last Salt Lake County races, McAdams only won like 30-35% or something like that of the last tranche of ballots.
I think it was a much smaller number than what we're talking about today.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. And so the question really will be, what is the composition of that 200,000? Where did they come from? This race will be a nail biter for the next 2 weeks, and it's going to go both ways. And if you remember, Mia Love pulled ahead and had the lead going into literally the final canvas day. And at that minute, it jumped up over 700 votes for McAdams, and that was it. You know what I mean? It was so interesting. So this race, it'll be a nail biter. And it probably always will be.
Yeah. Well, we can go to the legislature too, Dan, get your take there. But before we do that, wow, these constitutional amendments, seven of them on the ballot. And if I'm not mistaken, all seven will pass.
All seven of them will pass.
And you know, it used to be the rule in politics that what people don't understand, they vote no on. I don't think anybody understood these, and they still got a yes. So I wouldn't have predicted this. But the amendment
as the author of two of the amendments, I was quite surprised myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But Amendment G is the one that I think will have the most significant long-term impact. It would provide the legislature more flexibility in how they use income taxes. And this is something that the legislature really wanted. Dan, I guess that you must be smiling on the majority party on Capitol Hill.
Well, and it was my bill and my amendment, and I wrote the piece in favor of it. We needed this budget flexibility. You know, Natalie, we looked at overhauling and doing tax reform and went down that effort that was very popular with the voters, as we saw with the citizen referendum. So, Natalie, good policy aside, this will give us some headroom in the budget as we try and work with and solve problems internally.
Yeah. Dan, one more question before we go to Shireen. Will it result in less spending on public education and higher education than before?
It certainly
I don't think
open.
It will result at all in less spending in education. What it will do is it will just keep everything in balance. You know what I mean? We've shown consistently that revenue numbers and income tax do not guarantee increases in like salaries or whatever it might be. We've found that drops don't hurt and that the increases don't benefit. I mean, it's kind of a steady climb, like most government positions are.
Shireen, we need to give you a voice there on Amendment G.
Yeah, I think the language that ended up on the ballot on Amendment G was deeply misleading in terms of what the overall purpose of this was, which is exactly, as you mentioned, to kind of break that bond that we have in our Constitution to suggest that to secure that income tax goes to education. And this is really just diluting that. And I think it was done in a way that really has, as I've explained to people why I voted against G, you know, they feel very misled. So I think it was a backdoor, I guess, is what Dan is kind of suggesting to the tax, some of the issues that were tried to be approached in the tax reform. So now we're just getting a different route into what was highly unpopular with the public before. And I guess we're just going to do it a different way.
Interesting. Listen, Dan, I would love you to just break down really quickly what's happening in the Utah legislative races. Are the Democrats gaining some seats?
So right now it looks like I think I can say that it looks like they will for sure gain one seat. Eric Hutchings, he's a West Side Kearns legislator, and Eric's done a great job on mental health issues, on justice reform, all those other
on
things.
On the Olympics,
but
I'll
I don't
he's
know.
Been the guy
I don't
on the
know
Olympics.
The lead he can make it up. Yeah, and on the Olympics, I mean, but I just don't know that he can make up the gap that's in
so
his.
This will be Democrat Ashley Matthews.
Yeah. And so the other ones you'd have, Representative Dunnigan is he's currently, you know, close-ish. Eliason is closest, Steve Eliason and Sandy. And then, you know, the third one is always going to be either Representative Spendlove or Representative Hall trying to figure out can they hang on to the narrow leads they have. So really, it's like the McAdams race. It's going to really depend on where those ballots are coming from.
Yeah. So, Shireen, these are Salt Lake County districts where Wendy Davis, it looks like, might beat out Steve Eliason, who's one of my favorite legislators, and Democrat Lynette Wendell and might beat out Jim Dunnigan.
Yeah. So I think it's also interesting to look at the gender dynamics of these races. So Ashley, Lynette, Wendy, and then also looking at how countywide are Rochelle Hobbs, Jennifer Frasquez. There does seem to be a desire to put some women in office in Utah, which is nice to see.
Yeah, for sure. Dan, anything in the Senate, or does it just stay just the same?
It stays just the same. I mean, we kind of knew that was going to be the result. Senator Reby was the only one that was kind of close, and she pulled off a pretty big victory. So I don't see anything changing at all on the Senate side.
She's my senator. I'm not sure exactly how much time we have, but as we end out the program, let's talk COVID for just a second. Wow. We have entered a phase. The crisis continues. It's urgent. We have unsustainably high positivity rates. And high case counts, winter's beginning. One word of advice for our listeners, Shireen, and then Dan.
I think at this point, people really have to embrace a Thanksgiving that's going to be very small, just with your core family or a few people that you spend time with, because the kind of spread that we have is uncontrolled.
Dan, 15 seconds of advice.
Hey, now that I'm COVID-free, I'm just going to say this, people. If you have a choice between getting it or not getting it, choose not getting it and take steps to not get it, okay?
And I will just turn mine into a gripe. The vigilante anti-mask movement makes everything more difficult. We need people to come together here, and masks are the best thing we got going for us. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle with Shireen Gourvani and Dan McKay. I'm Natalie Gochner. Program is produced by the incredible Anthony Scoma. Stay safe, everyone, and we appreciate you listening.